Why Parshas Vayakel? Why doesn't the obvious question? Why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu just deliver the Beis Hamikdash or the Mishkan from Shemayim? He can perform miracles, split the oceans, deliver Torah from Har Sinai. In fact, there's a machlokas we've shown him whether the third Beis Hamikdash will be fashioned by Bas or Vadam, or will actually descend from Shemayim. Okay, that's the end of history, the launch of Utopia. But why this whole story, this whole scene that unfolds in the beginning of Vayakel? What are some of the values about encountering Hashem, about trying to build Hashem in your life? Remember, everything of the Mishkan is an icon and a metaphor at a collective and historical level, which then can be translated to a personal level. So everything that happens in the Mikdash, v'shachanti b'sacham. So first of all, it's important that when you start a project, don't ever just start a project without thinking, without having a vision where you're heading. Don't just start something epic without taking a moment to mark it, a ceremony, a thought, a conversation, if you're collaborating with someone else. One day we'll be starting great projects, a shul, a community, going to the army, whatever, a wedding. Don't let these moments that are epic and that are of meaning and magnitude, don't let them slip without, on the one hand, absorbing the moment. Sometimes people don't absorb the moment, but also setting the tone for the project. Because a project is, in 10 years, none of you are going to remember today's shiur. You may listen to it on recording. You'll remember your first day in Gush and your last day in Gush, because the bookends of our experience set the tone of our experience and etch themselves into our memory. So you don't forget when you start something. I remember the day I started Gush. I remember the day I ended Gush. It's hard for me to go back in time and remember 1984, some random date. But I do remember the day I started, and I do remember the day I ended. So when you start something, you can deepen the experience by noting it. And if you don't note it and mark it, then it just becomes just another day, and it disappears into your memory bank. So Moshe is gathering everyone, and he's trying to note something. So what's happening? So first of all, Chazal say, Ehov es hamalacha. You should appreciate work. Don't say love work. Yeah, don't translate things lazily. Yeah. You should value work. You should pursue work. Healthy work ethic. And there are many, many interpretations in Avos Rebbe Nassim, which is an elaboration, functionally, of Avos, Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Tarfon says, Ehov es hamalacha, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu delivered the Shechina to Am Yisrael through work. So evidently there is some value in working hard, even if it's not in the world of Kedusha necessarily. So when Hashem places Adam into Gan Eden, so the tasks that He gives man are li'ovda l'shamra. So human beings are built to work. Now keep in mind, this li'ovda l'shamra comes before the chait. We sometimes think that work is a punishment for the chait. That after the chait, b'zeh sapecha toch alechem. But the phrase li'ovda l'shamra actually precedes the chait. So man is born to work, adam li'amal yulad. And Rav Lichtenstein once told us that there's a sheet in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rav Aaron told us, that if a goy shashabas, normally we say if a goy keeps Shabbos, on Shabbos itself, chayiv misa. Why? Because he's invaded our private world with Hashem. But there's a day in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that a goy shashabas, even if it's a Monday or a Tuesday, let's say a culture were to decide that they're not going to work at all on Monday and Tuesday, that would also be chayiv misa. Why? Monday, Tuesday is not our day of Hashem, it's not our bris. Why would their creating a Shabbos on Monday or Tuesday be so criminal? So Rav Aaron said, because if you don't have a divine decree, you have no right not to work. So we who are operating under a divine decree, we have the right not to work, as Hashem wants us to remember something more transcendent, Bria Solam. A non-Jew doesn't have a divine decree to keep Shabbos. If they unilaterally cease from work any day, whether it's Shabbos or a set Monday every Monday, that would be walking away from your human responsibility to work and to produce and to change the world, and that would be the crime. So the crime wouldn't be the encroachment upon our Shabbos, the crime would be walking away from Malacha. So Avos HaMalacha, part of the reason Hashem did not want the Beis HaMikdash to descend from Shemayim is Hashem wants us, there's a nobility, you enhance your morality. A lot of secular Jews, secular Zionists in the return to Eretz Yisrael, they were looking for value-driven ideologies. And for us, our value-driven ideology is prophetic and historical and religious. So when we come back to Eretz Yisrael, there's a whole boatload of values and ideas that we can breathe into our return, that we can frame our return. But many secular Zionists, their value, their sacred value of coming back to Israel was working the land, not just the land. A.B. Gordon, some of you have read Zionist history, but the value of a work ethic, the nobility that it imparts. And it's not just the nobility, but it's also the partnership with Hashem. So the same mission in Avos Rebbe Nassim says that Hashem created a bris about work. Kibrisi Benu Vibinesa, the Parsha and Kitisa. What does it mean that when we work there's a bris between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A bris is always bilateral. A bris is always complementary. So on the one hand, Shabbos being mentioned before the Mishkan suggests a clash between Shabbos and Mishkan. And that clash has to be favored for Shabbos halachically. Don't violate Shabbos to build the Mishkan. But on a broader conceptual level, Shabbos and Mishkan don't clash. That's why the Isurim of Shabbos draw from Mishkan. Why? Because Hashem created the world, and that creation is described in Bereishis. But He intentionally left the world imperfect. And He wants us to complement His imperfect world by perfecting the world. So when we perfect the world, we're literally partnering with Hashem. And that perfection can obviously be spiritual, as it is in Shemos, where by the time Shemos is over, Geula has been achieved because we've brought Hashem into this world. But part of bringing Hashem into this world is also to perfect the world materially. So if you're a doctor, or if you're a builder, or if you're an engineer, and you're perfecting the world and making human beings have a better life, and a better life should lead them to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to live as Hashem wants human prosperity, so you're a partner with Hashem. So when Chazal say that Hashem created a bris surrounding Malacha, a bris doesn't just mean it's a higher ethical standard that warrants the Shechina. A bris means you're literally marching in lockstep with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created as well. That's why there's so many shout-outs. Look, over the next 2 weeks, there's so many shout-outs in Parshas Vayakel and Pekudei, two Parshas Bereishis. Probably what's the most famous ones? Anyone know in this week's Parsha? What's the shout-out to Bereishis? Vayikale Ha'am Mehavi. What does that sound like? Vayikale Ha'am Mehavi? Vayikulash Mayim Varetz. And then in next week's parsha, Vatichla Havoda. So both Vayaka and Bekudei have the word Vayichulu. And then in Bekudei, Vayar Moshe Kitov, Vayivarech Hosam. What does that sound like? Vayar Moshe Kitov, Vayivarech Hosam. Vayalakim Kitov, Vayivarech Hosam. So Hashem wants to parallel human creation with divine creation. And Shemos is the conclusion of Bereishis. Some of us have to read Shemos as the second part of Bereishis. Hashem creates the world. There's a spiritual vacuum. For whatever reason, Hashem placed His presence in our hands. His presence in this world is in our hands. We struggled to bring Him into this world. By the end of Shemos, we have brought Him into this world. That's the conclusion of Bereishis, and that's the bris of Malacha. So it would be completely inconceivable for us to bring Hashem into this world without Malacha, because that's what He wants. He doesn't want to unilaterally impose Himself into this world. He wants human beings to bring Him into this world. We bring Him into this world with our free will, but we also bring Him into this world with the work that we do to complement the work He does. So to be creative and to change this world and to improve this world, whether it's spiritually or otherwise, is part of our bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We complement His bria with our own bria, which is why the Mishkan has to be a product of human effort and human toil. The second reason that this is happening is not just the value of work, but the context in which the work is taking place. Vayakel Moshe es b'nei Yisrael. Moshe gathers everyone. Chazal say this is a miracle, that all 3 million people could be gathered into one place, however that occurred, but there's a miracle. But evidently it's not incidental, because when Shlomo launches the Beis HaMikdash, anyone know the language? Uz Yakel Shlomo. The exact same term as Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlomo uses. Namely, you can only encounter Hashem fully if it's performed through a communal experience, not on a personal level. Obviously, im ein ani li mi li, and obviously each person has a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Shekhinah, right? Shuv Hashem, Ribavos Alfa Yisrael. What does the Gemara say? We say it in Davening, that if there aren't 22,000 Jews, or whatever the number, then you can't have the Shekhinah. Even if one Jew is missing, the Shekhinah. So the full encounter with the Shekhinah is a collective experience and a communal experience. So had the Mishkan been delivered from Shemayim, that Hiskalus, that gathering would never have taken place. In this context, the Hiskalus is also important because it helps redeem the mob tone that was set in the Egel, where sometimes you have groupthink and you abdicate freedom of choice and you just follow the mob. We're seeing that in today's world. Many people, not all, but many people who are virulent anti-Semites or virulent protesters, they don't know the first thing, they don't know the first idea about what Palestine is, what the river is, what the sea is, but there's mob rule. People follow the herd. People are afraid to stand up. People are afraid to think on their own. They're afraid of pressure. So the pressure got to many people in the ego, so it has to be rerouted into healthy collective experience, not herd mentality, where everyone just follows what everyone's screaming and shouting. But in a broader sense, it teaches us the value of community. One of the phrases I'd like you to change is not which community you live in, but which community you live with. Living in a community suggests you're living there passively receiving goods, services, and friendships. Living with a community means you're living and you're contributing, part of communal life. Don't ever be part of a community where you're not a giver. If you are in a community where you're just a taker, that's not community. That's selfish taking. Every community you're in, whether it's family or what we call a real community of people, that family's not a real community. When I say real community, as opposed to the internet fabricating fictitious communities, or the Yankee Nation, the community of wrestlers, the community of fashionistas. What does any of that mean? You're not living with people. You're not exchanging ideas. You just happen to overlap with your interests. And when those overlapping interests take place, you have common events, a fashion show, a Yankee game, whatever, the hamburger community. You have to be careful about how you use the word community, because it can reroute you, like the words friends, from real communities. What does community give you? Community reinforces values. You live with people of similar values. Those values are reinforced. Community gives you moral selflessness. When you live in a community, you give to others. You live beyond yourself. You connect with other people's lives. People always ask me, what should I do? What's the first thing I do when I move into a community? The first thing you should do when you move into community is find something to contribute to the community. It could be minor and symbolic. And it could be a temporary community. I'm living on the Upper West Side just for a couple of years till I settle in Teaneck, or until I settle. Whatever it could, don't be, at least not long term, but don't be in a community where you're just a taker. Find some way, to having people over, could be trying to contribute to God, but try and find some way, because that's communal life. It has to be bilateral. So it reinforces values. Community teaches you to act immoral with moral selflessness. Communal life connects you to the lives of others, brings you out of your narrow world. Community life is crucial for mental health. Many studies have shown that middle-aged white males in the modern world have very little social and communal interactions. They tend to stay on their couch, watch TV, go to work, go shopping. Women are much more social, so they create social connections even through their middle ages. Whereas men, they fall out of social spheres. And because of that, the rates of suicide and the rates of depression amongst these males are sadly very, very high. And most Jewish males have an interesting solution to social context. It's called minyan. If you're to go to minyan 3 times a day, you're forced to leave your house and just be with other people, look at other people, talk to other people, brush by other people. You don't live in isolation. So living a life of community is part of the way we grow, and of course part of the way we're makabel l'shchina. Those are the two scenes that are taking place in Vayakhel: work and community. And they're two values that are crucial to human well-being and human welfare, and also moral integrity. Work and community. Okay? Shabbat shalom, everyone. Shabbat shalom. You're welcome.